Hello everyone, it's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.
The world is filled with many questions, such as, did giants exist?
What is junk DNA? Does it mean that you're trash?
Do you ever wonder if aliens have underwater bases in our oceans and that's why there are so many UFO sightings off the coasts of islands all over the world?
How serious even is climate change, and when should we start building our rafts?
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Bruna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore the answers to these questions and many, many more in our new podcast, Mystery of Everything, available everywhere you get your podcasts.
It began long ago. Two young boys in an American town riding their bikes to school and Little League practice. Over the years, the boys became fast friends, united in their love for stories where things would go horribly wrong. Pour yourself a strong beverage and buckle up. You're in the shallow end with Schnebly and Toth.
It's episode 64 of The Shallow End with Schnebly and Toth.
Is it 64 or 65?
I think... Well, geez, did I misspeak? You know what? It's episode 65 of The Shallow End with Schnebly and Toth. I was a week behind. I'm going to blame air travel, JG.
It's jet lag.
I'm coming to you from the swanky Stillwater, Minnesota studios of The Shallow End. I don't think people realize it, but we have studios all over the world.
It's a international conglomerate.
So this week I'm recording from our Stillwater, Minnesota studios. And I came here last week with my wife, who is from the Twin Cities, and we went to the Minnesota State Fair, which I had heard for many years is one of the biggest state fairs in the country. And indeed, I was bowled over by just how big this is. It's like over 100,000 people a day. It's absolutely nuts.
Do they have stuff like fried Oreos and things like that? Because I'm in.
Buddy, the amount of fried food... Fried every picture, anything, and they will fry it.
What about a Nike sneaker?
If I had stayed longer, I probably could have found a deep fried Nike, probably several. Here's the Air Jordan model. Here's the LeBron James model. Yeah. Everywhere you look, there's every different kind of fair food you can think of. So about halfway through the afternoon, I looked up and realized that we were at the Cream Puff Hut. And I thought, well, I loves me a good cream puff. I think a vanilla cream puff would be just the thing for a man's hunger at 3:30 in the afternoon.
And let me just point out, too, that a cream puff never tastes better than when consumed in a hut.
Or directly outside thereof.
Yes.
So that's a bit of a line. It was maybe a five-minute wait. You know, I'm going to say there were 10, 12 people in front of us, and the line is slowly snaking up to the counter. And there's a guy by himself in front of Nancy and me. And you know what you're going to get. I mean, there's a giant menu board that says menu, cream puffs. And then underneath that, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry. Ah. So it's a rather limited menu, but it's a very specific menu. And you've got minutes and minutes to stare at the words cream puffs, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry. But sure enough, there's a shallow end moment in all of our lives. And this guy in front of us now gets up to the counter and he looks up at the sign and finally goes, "Ah, boy, I don't know." And I thought, you got to be freaking kidding me, dude. It's not a difficult choice. It's chocolate, vanilla, or strawberry. And so even the guy behind the cash register sort of rolled his eyes at me like, what about the menu is not clear here.
Yeah. Did he end up ordering a hot dog?
I think he wanted a deep fried Nike tennis shoe.
Okay. All right.
Therein lay all the confusion and chaos. Mm-hmm. But I was very proud because I ordered my vanilla cream puff and was away from the counter in about 10.3 seconds. And I muttered to Nancy under my breath, "Now that's how you order a freaking cream puff."
Yeah. Kind of like the soup Nazi episode from Seinfeld.
Exactly. You know what you want when you get up there, or you're doomed.
Place your order and step aside.
Anyway, I think are you going first today?
I think so.
I believe you do. Yeah.
Now, as we have determined this many times, I'm in Ecuador. So I thought it would be interesting to scour some of the South American news sites to see if I could find anything in this part of the world that would qualify as a shallow end moment. And guess what, my friend? I was successful.
It worked?
It did.
Because this is the beauty of the shallow end situation. It knows no borders nor boundaries.
Truly an international phenomenon.
Every country has its share of shallow enders. I can't wait to hear yours.
It takes place in Soacha, Colombia.
What a great name.
It's spelled S-O-A-C-H-A, Soacha. Soacha.
Soacha, Colombia.
It's a lively enclave nestled in the heart of Colombia, with its bustling marketplaces filled with the vibrant colors of fresh produce, fervent merchants haggling with the same passion that they reserve for their football matches, and the ever-present hum of life in all its unscripted glory. But we're going to sprinkle in a little zest to this already flavorful mix. Enter,
oh, I love this,
stage left, if you will, our two, well, innovative patrol officers. These two were aspiring for a bit more than just being a police officer. They had an entrepreneurial flair to them. Now, Hollywood's crime dramas, with their rehearsed lines and predictable plots, pale in comparison to what happens here. The real drama, the unscripted kind with misguided ingenuity, is about to unfold right before our eyes in this quaint little town.
Of Soacha.
Of Soacha. Imagine, if you will, a leisurely walk down Soacha's cobblestone, sun-kissed lanes, and picture vibrant stalls overflowing with nature's bounty. Plump tomatoes, ripe avocados, perhaps, you know, a sneaky kid trying to grab a grape or two from a nearby vendor. And, of course, the intoxicating aroma of freshly brewed Colombian coffee.
Delicious.
Now, as you meander, you can't help but get lost amidst the gleam of handcrafted trinkets and the whispered secrets of age-old recipes that have been passed down for generations. But amidst this idyllic setting, here's the plot twist.
I'm ready for it.
Enter our protagonists.
Plural.
Or should we say, the market's self-appointed tax collectors. These two local police officers. Yeah, you see where this is going?
I think I get an idea.
These officers weren't your average duty-bound police officers. No, these men were filled with ambition, swagger, and a questionable moral compass. With a glint in their eyes, the dynamic duo navigated the throngs, approaching various merchants. Now, I wasn't there, but I can almost hear their rehearsed gravitas in their voices. And hey, we got a deal for you. Proposition. It's a tantalizing offer for the safety of a vendor. But the catch, of course, is that this is not your granddad's protection racket. It's been modernized from the age-old hustle.
It's much more 2023.
In the world of Netflix and Spotify, our officers have rolled out their premium, platinum, or whatever you want to call it, protection subscription. One neat 2 million peso payment. It's a lifetime subscription.
Oh, okay.
2 million pesos.
One and done.
Yep, one and done. Now, the vendor had been targeted specifically by these officers because he had a criminal record, and they knew he didn't want to go back to jail.
Of course not.
So, but he was still more attuned to the traditional commerce and less to the nuances of extortion as a service. He couldn't quite gather the money together. So instead of a courteous pop-up notification or a gentle nudge, he found himself enjoying the cold, uninviting ambience of the local police station. They took him in.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, in an unexpected turn of events, these two entrepreneurial officers, perhaps taking a leaf from a salesman's book, gave him a, quote, discounted offer. A mere 500,000 pesos. So they came down 75%.
Well, that's quite a discount.
The generosity of it all.
Yeah.
But they underestimated the merchant's resilience. Instead of cowering, he chose to raise his voice against the injustice, risking it all. For while the money they sought would have been a blow to his livelihood, the price of his silence, he felt, would have been greater. So he gathers up his courage and he approaches a different police station and he recounts this tale of extortion, of threats masked as favors, and also the insidious subscription model that the two police officers had constructed.
Yeah.
His testimony.
Yeah, that's a gutsy thing to do, because I think the your first inclination would be, I'm going to report the police to the police, but I can't really imagine that that would end up going too well, but I'm getting ahead of your story.
His testimony did shed light on the two patrolmen, but also revealed the depths to which they were willing to sink, using their very badges to extort local merchants and take advantage of the fact that they had a criminal record and they knew that they didn't want to go back to jail for anything. So the sun was beginning to cast long shadows over Swatch's marketplace, and it bore witness to an unfolding drama that would soon become the stuff of local legend.
Mm-hmm.
In a carefully orchestrated operation, the police, armed with the merchant's damning testimony, had crafted a plan to catch these rogue officers in the act. Now, the stage was set, and all the players were unwittingly moving toward their cues. At the agreed-upon time, as it approached, the marketplace's usual bustle and hustle took on a heightened tension because many of the merchants had been made privy to what was going to happen. They exchanged subtle glances, their eyes darting to the entrance intermittently. Then, like wolves in sheep's clothing, the two police officers entered the scene, clad in their uniforms. I'm sure they felt an invincibility typical of those unaware that their reckoning is nigh. As they approached the designated merchant to collect their ill-gotten gains, the air grew thick with anticipation, and just as the bills were handed over, a shout echoed through the marketplace. Police, stay where you are. But of course it was in, you know, Spanish.
Right.
The patrolmen, with a look of shock on their faces, found themselves ensnared in the very trap they believed they had set for others. Now, just when you think you've seen it all, life will throw you a curveball.
Isn't that the truth?
In the midst of being caught with their hands not only in the cookie jar, but basically the entire bakery, our two protagonists faced a dilemma of Shakespearean proportions. Where can I hide this money that I'm holding in my hand? The officer holding the wad of cash thought. I know. I'll swallow it.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
For the most part, the idea of digesting our mistakes is metaphorical. But for one of these intrepid officers, they took on a very literal meaning. Perhaps he mistook the crisp bills for the latest diet trend, or perhaps he believed the old wives' tale that money, like celery, has negative calories when consumed. Regardless, in a fit of what could only be described as gastronomic depression, down went the evidence. Now, I wonder how that tasted.
Yeah, I was just thinking, that can't taste at all good.
Probably had a little bitter aftertaste of impending doom. Here's where it gets funny. The money gets caught in his throat and he begins to choke on it, all the while insisting he's innocent. And there's a video of him going, and then in Spanish, insisting that he did nothing wrong.
Of course.
Indeed, while most of us have heard tales of money burning holes in our pockets, this was a first, money potentially perforating a stomach lining. Did he think that this was somehow a substitute for dietary fiber? or was he just trying to support the economy? It's unclear, Linz. So now enter Carlos Manuel Silva, the director of the prosecutor's office. And one can't help but imagine the look on his face when he was presented with this case. Silva revealed that the officers had ingested, or the officer, only one of them did.
Right.
A 100,000 peso bill and eight additional 50,000 peso bills, totaling 500,000 pesos, and added, quote, "The material with which the bills are made is a strong material and not easily digested."
Oh, God.
In the dimly lit corners of a medical facility, our our two once proud officers now find themselves trading their shiny badges and patrol car seats for hospital beds and concerned glances from nurses. Gone are the days of strutting through the market lanes. They are now eagerly awaiting the doctor's visit, probably wishing for a bout of amnesia, or at the very least, some top-notch antacids. It's poetic justice in a sense. For while they dictated terms to so many people in Soacha, they now find themselves at the mercy of prison menus, which one would wager don't feature crispy peso bills.
Nor vanilla cream puffs.
No, or deep fried shoes. And then there's the vendor, the unwilling protagonist of this fiasco. His past may have painted a bullseye on his back, but fate, with its quirky sense of humor, ensured he sat in the audience for the greatest show in town. I picture him perhaps with a little smile on his face, observing the poetic comeuppance of the two officers who once tormented him. So next time someone with a glint in their eye declares they're hungry for money, tell them this cautionary tale of Soacha and their patrolmen. Because while idioms give flavor to our language, sometimes, just sometimes, it's wise not to chew on them too literally. This story I found a South American news site called El Espectador.
It reminds me of the old Scooby-Doo thing, and I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for you darn kids.
And then they pull off a mask, yeah, and it's always Mr. Jenkins, the caretaker.
Exactly.
And his name was always Mr. Jenkins. God, that guy.
That was weird.
Couldn't hold a job.
When Johann Rahl received the letter on Christmas Day 1776, he put it away to read later. Maybe he thought it was a season's greeting and wanted to save it for the fireside. But what it actually was a warning, delivered to the Hessian colonel, letting him know that General George Washington was crossing the Delaware and would soon attack his forces. The next day, when Rahl lost the Battle of Trenton and died from two colonial Boxing Day musket balls, the letter was found, unopened, in his vest pocket. As someone with 15,000 unread emails in his inbox, I feel like there's a lesson there. Oh well, this is The Constant, a history of getting things wrong. I'm Mark Chrysler. Every episode, we look at the bad ideas, mistakes, and accidents that misshaped our world. Find us at constantpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered what really happened to Amelia Earhart or the lost colony of Roanoke? Do you ever find yourself scouring the internet for vicious Victorians and their murders by gaslight? Or perhaps you're just sick and tired of women being constantly misrepresented or plain lied about throughout history? If so, join me, Katie Charlwood, history harlot and reader of books, on Who Did What Now, the history podcast that's not your history class. Part of the Area of Media Network. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Adios, au revoir, au revoir de zen, my friends. Bye-bye. I'll be seeing you.
Ever gotten tired of the stock voice for your GPS in the car? Take your GPS to the next level with the real voice of actress Jennifer Coolidge. Check this out. Hey, Jennifer, what's the fastest way to the post office?
Oh, the post office. Really? I never really mail anything. Anywhere. What if you, send her flowers? Flowers are pretty.
Let the soothing voice of Jennifer Coolidge guide you in your travels. Hey, Jennifer, where's the closest bar?
What was the question? Something about a car.
No, Jennifer, the nearest bar, you know, a tavern?
Oh, I could really go for a cocktail right about now.
Your directions may no longer make sense, but think of the fun you and Jennifer will have as you drive together. Hey, Jennifer, tell me a story.
Well, once I was supposed to meet this friend for dinner, but I couldn't find my car. So, like, after an hour, he came and, wait, what were we talking about?
The Jennifer Coolidge GPS voice. Maybe not very accurate, but way more entertaining.
I really have to pee. Like, real bad.
Celebrity voice impersonated.
Our email address is lifeguard@shallowendpodcast.com. And normally, I would read a listener email at this point. But we, in all candor, got so many over the past few days that I can't figure out which one to read today. So I will have, maybe next week I will read two after I get a chance to go through them. But people have been very, very prolific and productive in sending us emails. And I just wanted to thank everybody for sending in emails, story suggestions, questions, comments to lifeguard@shallowendpodcast.com. We read every single one. And as I said, this week there were so many that it was actually an embarrassment of riches.
When you send us so many emails and then you expect us to choose just one, it's like asking us to decide which child of ours is our favorite.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's a great, great analogy.
And we do have favorites, but we need a little more time to determine.
Lifeguard@shallowendpodcast.com.
You're in the Shallow End with Schnepley and Toth.
This is an interesting story this week, JG, and I actually debated whether or not to do it, but in doing more and more research, I thought it was a good thing to call out.
Okay.
And I think you'll see why in a minute when I sort of back into the story. I've always been fascinated by, well, you and I have a shared fascination with World War II.
Yes.
And with stories and visiting battlefields and just everything that went into one of the most horrific episodes probably in human history. And some amazing stories, you know, of the human spirit and triumph and overcoming incredible obstacles. And then obviously some very, very dark stories that have emerged as well. One of those is a very famous story about General Dwight D. Eisenhower upon coming into the Ohrdruf concentration camp in Germany, just behind the soldiers that liberated it, the Allied Expeditionary Forces in Europe. And he was looking around and completely, understandably overwhelmed by everything that he saw in front of him, and reportedly said to somebody, or maybe nobody in particular, "I want film and still photos taken of everything you see here, because someday the day will come when some son of a bitch says this never happened."
Right, right.
And I remember hearing that story as a kid and thinking, how could you think that didn't happen? And lo and behold, here we are in 2023 with some very high visibility people claiming the Holocaust never happened. Probably one of the most best known is a guy named Nick Fuentes, who, you know, has been on news for various reasons and actually had his YouTube channel suspended in 2020 for violating YouTube's hate speech policy. But this brings us to one of the more odd and believe it or not, comical stories in terms of the shallow end moments. And it actually happened just a few weeks ago up in the Bay Area. And a shout out to my good pal, John Oddie, for sending me this. And actually, John was the first of several listeners who said, hey, this would be an interesting story. There is an MMA fighter who is Israeli, and his name is Natan Levy. And Levy has mocked Nick Fuentes, the Holocaust denier, and in fact posted a shirtless photo of himself. And not surprisingly, Nick Fuentes has some followers, people who believe in all these things that Nick Fuentes has said. This guy, we only know his name as Ben. And Ben actually challenged this UFC fighter to a sparring match. Now, have you ever, I'm just curious, JG, have you ever been to a UFC match in person?
Not in person, no. But yeah. I understand it's
You've obviously seen it on TV.
Yeah, there's a lot of bodily fluid splatter.
It is. I went to one. I was shooting a story for a client, and I ended up going of all places to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, for a UFC match. And we had press access, you know, cameras allowed everywhere, backstage, just outside the ring, and it was one of the single most brutal things I'd ever seen in my life. And interviewing these guys, these fighters, before and after matches, seeing them the next morning, you know, barely able to walk out of the hotel lobby to make their flight back to wherever. It's just, I can't even describe what it's like to witness these guys go at it, you know, in the octagon. So amazingly, Ben, who apparently never provided his last name, challenged Mr. Levy to a cage match and said, I think we should square off in the octagon, quote, on behalf of Nicholas J. Fuentes and America First. And Levy actually didn't think Ben was very serious about it, because if you know anything about these guys, I mean, they are beasts.
Yeah.
They are stronger than sin, and they could literally beat you to death with their bare hands. But Ben was apparently serious about this. You know, I misspoke when I said this took place in the Bay Area. It took place in Las Vegas. And Natan Levy says to Ben, hey, listen, I think you're going to get your ass kicked, but, you know, yeah, you want to come here? You can sign some paperwork and we'll go at it. Well, much to his surprise, Ben was serious about it. They keep exchanging texts back and forth. And just 2 days later, Ben arrives at the Extreme Couture Gym in Vegas. And he signed all the paperwork, you know, waiving any damage, any injuries, and I'm doing this on my own, and I'm not being forced into it, and I fully accept the fact that there is a huge physical risk to this to this thing. So he says, Ben said, I saw one of Natan Levy's posts on Twitter. It was critical of somebody who associates himself with America First and the political values that I value. As a defender of that, this is Ben, and a former martial arts experienced trained person myself, I just thought it would be fun to come and spar. So before the two even step inside the octagon, Levy, the fighter, asks Ben why he was supposedly, quote, talking S about the Jews on Twitter, unquote. He also confronts Ben about Ben's allegiance to Nick Fuentes. Ben says, quote, "I think because what he says is right." So Levy, the fighter, is quick to point out that Fuentes adamantly denies the Holocaust. And Ben stands firm and says, "Well, I actually think he's more of a revisionist," which I thought was an interesting way to say, you know, you're a Holocaust denier. So Levy immediately asks, "Well, like what?" And Ben says, "Well, you know, they say 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. It's nowhere near that number. It's nowhere near 6 million. Now, as they begin gearing up to start sparring, Ben begins detailing his fighting experience. And this was to me fascinating, because I thought, first off, I don't know how bright you are to be a Holocaust denier. Second, to think, you know what, I'm gonna go fight a UFC guy at his gym, because, and here's what I love. He says he's practiced karate and taekwondo for 8 years, and even though he had never been in the octagon before, he said to Natan Levy, "But I did play UFC 4, the video game, a lot."
Ah, okay. Good.
Okay. Which is sort of like, you know, I've flown a lot of planes on my PC in my bedroom, so I'm pretty sure I can take this 747 up and bring it down safely.
Bring it down in a safe and responsible manner.
Precisely. So Levy's listening to this and kind of nodding, and finally says, "Okay, I promise not to hurt you too bad." And then says, "But a lesson needs to be taught here about trolling."
Mm-hmm.
"Education is painful sometimes," and promised a classic case of, quote, "F around and find out." Well, and this is all on YouTube. You can actually see the entire match, in quotes, on YouTube and see exactly what Ben had put himself into. And it's really important to point out that's exactly what happened. Nobody twisted Ben's arm to do this. It was his idea. He thought, this is going to be a great idea. I'm going to go take on this Natan Levy guy and show him what's what. Well, it didn't take long to establish that Ben is out of place, because Levy immediately starts landing kicks to the body and punches to the face at will.
Mm.
And then instantly takes Ben down to the mat and puts him in a what they call a submission hold, as everyone in the gym is cheering Levy on. Ben attempts to tap out. Levy continues the hold. The two get back on their feet, but Levy quickly takes him down again and lands numerous punches to the face and the body. And during this beatdown, Ben says, "I'm sorry," out loud, to the amusement of the spectators. So not long after that round, Ben gets in front of the camera, and sure enough, his tune has suddenly changed. And he looks to the camera and he says, "Yeah, 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. I guess I need to be more well-researched," which I thought was an interesting term. Levy tells Ben that this time the beatdown wasn't that painful, but the next time he trolls online in defense of Nick Fuentes, it's going to be a hell of a lot worse.
Oof. Now, normally, I'm not the kind of guy who thinks that the best way to settle an issue is with violence, but in this case, he signed up for this. He brought this on himself.
Yeah, yeah. That to me is the real shallow end part of this, is that Ben could have just left well enough alone, but to go out of his way to say to Natan Levy, "Hey, I want to come and spar with you because I don't like the smack you're talking about Nick Fuentes," I think Yeah, I think most of us would have thought, you know, if you taunt the badger, you're going to lose a limb. If you poke the bear with a stick, something bad is going to happen. And indeed, that's precisely what happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
wow.
Add to our long list of things we've cautioned listeners not to do. Don't rob banks. Don't rob anybody. Don't light things on fire. And for God's sake, don't challenge a UFC fighter to a cage match, because it's not going to end well.
Unless you are, in fact, a UFC fighter yourself.
Yeah, that's very, very different. Then you're in the club and you're a professional, right. And yeah. You know what you're doing.
Part of the fraternity.
You know what you're doing. Yeah. Again, our email address is lifeguard@shallowendpodcast.com. We're going to be swimming in viewer emails, listener emails, subscriber emails next week. Appreciate you putting up with the change in the regular format due to me being, well, actually, I'm a little hungover from all those vanilla cream
puffs.
Well,
yeah, you get that sugar crash going. That's nasty business.
That'll take it out on a man, believe me. I hope if I ever meet Natan Levy, the UFC fighter, that rather than challenge him to a cage match, I can just hand him a bag of fresh cream puffs and say, here's a little something for you, Nick.
Yeah, there you go. Enjoy. Thanks for hanging out with us, you guys. It's always important to remember to make good choices.
Because your life, and maybe even your cream puffs, could depend on it.
So concludes another episode of The Shallow End with Schnepley and Toff. We thank you for listening. Oh, be a dear, would you? Please subscribe to this podcast, give these boys a 5-star rating, and think of something nice to say, even if you have to make something up. And visit us online at shallowendpodcast.com. Okay, gotta go.